The entertainment and culture stories this week have a theme running through them that I find genuinely interesting, which is the question of what institutions can and can't control in a media environment where the traditional levers of power have changed. ABC blocking Rosie O'Donnell's Trump parody for Jimmy Kimmel's show is the most direct example. ABC, which is owned by Disney, made a call that a specific piece of content was too politically sharp for broadcast and blocked it. That decision itself becomes the story, amplifying the parody's existence in ways that the broadcast would not have. The Streisand effect, named after Barbara Streisand's 2003 attempt to suppress photographs of her Malibu home, which resulted in far more people seeing the photos, is as reliable a dynamic in 2026 as it was in 2003.
The Wisconsin gubernatorial candidate Kayla Hong's cancel Thanksgiving controversy is in the same neighborhood. The CNN interview where she made the comment drew criticism not just from Republicans, but from David Axelrod, Obama's chief political strategist and fellow Democrats, a week before the primary. The interesting political question isn't whether the comment was wise, clearly it wasn't, but why a Democratic frontrunner in a competitive primary is getting this kind of criticism from within her own party a week before voters decide. It suggests the party's appetite for candidates who test rhetorical limits is lower than activists sometimes believe.
The congressional candidate who shot flock cameras, the automated license plate readers deployed extensively in some communities, raising thousands in small dollar donations afterward, is a window into how a very specific privacy and surveillance concern has become politically resonant in a way that crosses traditional ideological lines. Flock cameras have been controversial among civil libertarians on the left and among gun rights and anti-surveillance conservatives on the right. A candidate who destroys one on camera and then fundraises on it is performing a symbolic act that lands for constituencies that don't usually agree on much.
The Musk-Tesla earnings call story, that Musk now spends roughly half of each Tesla earnings call discussing AI rather than automobiles, is a legitimate business concern for Tesla shareholders who purchase shares in an electric vehicle company. Tesla's market valuation has long been premised on it being more than a car company, but the specific mechanism by which AI creates value for Tesla's business is not always clear in Musk's framing. xAI, Grok, and Tesla's Dojo computing infrastructure are related but distinct ventures, and shareholders asking which entity is actually capturing the value from AI investment have a reasonable question.
The Call Me Author situation, a writer who lost a $2.4 million book deal after AI-generated claims about her circulated, is the real-world harm version of the AI misinformation concern. The author is declaring innocence, which means either AI systems generated false claims that were treated as credible by the publisher, or there's a dispute about what the claims actually said and whether they were AI generated. Either scenario is troubling. If publishers are making seven-figure decisions based on AI-generated research without verification, that's a failure of editorial process. If AI systems are generating false and damaging biographical claims, that's a defamation concern that the legal system hasn't yet developed adequate remedies for.
The Mamdani grocery store ID story, the New York City mayoral frontrunner denying he proposed requiring IDs at grocery stores after facing MAGA backlash, reflects the degree to which political candidates in 2026 are navigating accusations that spread at social media speed and get embedded in the public record before any correction can travel as far. Whether the original claim was accurate or fabricated, Mamdani's campaign had to spend resources on a denial that shouldn't have been necessary if the claim was false.
And the Medicare Part D subsidy story. The Trump administration ending the premium stabilization program a year early, potentially raising drug costs for 25 million enrollees, is the policy story that will have the most direct effect on people's lives of anything we've covered in this segment. The premium stabilization program was designed to smooth year-over-year cost increases for Part D enrollees. Ending it at the end of 2026 rather than its scheduled sunset means beneficiaries face cost increases on a compressed timeline. For a population that is largely on fixed incomes, prescription drug cost increases are not an abstract policy concern.
Now, I want to get into our What If We're Wrong segment, and I want to focus on the claim that feels most certain in financial media right now. The consensus that the AI investment supercycle is either a bubble that will pop catastrophically or a sustainable transformation that justifies current valuations.
The bubble case rests on Burian Dalio's warnings, the AI hedge fund collapse, the $100 billion in bonds trading at junk spreads, and historical analogies to 1929 and 2000. The consensus is increasingly that AI valuations have outrun current monetization and that a correction of some magnitude is coming. That's actually becoming the modal view, not the contrarian one.
So here's the what if we're wrong question. What if the AI build-out is not a bubble, but a genuine infrastructure transition, where the lag between capital expenditure and revenue generation is longer than previous technology cycles, but the eventual revenue is also larger? The railroad build-out of the 1870s and 1880s looked like a speculative excess. Many railroad companies went bankrupt, but the actual railroads, once built, generated economic value for a century. The investors who lost money weren't wrong about railroads being important. They were wrong about the timeline and about which specific companies would capture the value.
The assumption most vulnerable to being wrong in the current AI consensus is the timing of monetization. Ray Dalio's historical parallels all involve assets that were priced for futures that didn't arrive on schedule. What if generative AI's commercial applications, which are genuinely early, arrive at scale in 2027 and 2028 rather than 2025 and 2026? In that scenario, companies that can survive a valuation reset without catastrophic leverage problems would be fine. The ones that fail are the ones that borrowed against optimistic 2025 timelines and can't refinance.
The specific indicator to watch: corporate AI revenue as a line item in earnings calls. Right now, most companies are reporting AI cost savings or efficiency gains, not AI-driven revenue lines. The moment you start seeing specific auditable revenue figures attributed to AI products, not "we're more efficient because of AI," but "this product generated X billion dollars in new revenue from AI-native use cases," that's when you can assess whether the monetization timeline is on track. If those numbers don't appear in a meaningful way by mid-2027, the bubble argument gets substantially stronger. If they do appear, Burry and Dalio will have been wrong about timing, even if they were right about the analogy.
What would also flip the analysis? A significant deflationary shock to AI compute costs. If NVIDIA's next generation of chips, or a competitive alternative from AMD, Anthropic's hardware partners, or a Chinese competitor, drops inference costs by another 80 to 90% on the 2025 to 2027 timeframe, that would both validate the technology and potentially undermine the companies that have built their valuations on selling expensive compute. The companies that win in a cheap compute world are different from the companies that win in an expensive compute world. That's the scenario that's underpriced in most current analysis.